go ahead and resume this meeting. I believe we're on item 14, discussion of possible action, reaffirm Story County administrative policies and procedures. Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This discussion action item is entirely about liability. Since May of 2014, there's been two incidents in the Highlands involving county-owned emergency vehicles operated by non-employees. Story County has been very consistent in its restricting non-employees from operating county-owned vehicles, whether it be county-owned vehicles or county-owned emergency vehicles. If I may read the part of policy number 10, which Pat Whitten authorized on April 7, 2009. Under item 2A, it states that the use of county vehicles and equipment will be limited to county employees who, by the nature of their duties, have a need to operate such equipment. These two incidents that we had give me great pause. And it gives me pause as to a potential catastrophic liability position that we may be potentially in. This liability position is not only for Story County, but also will greatly sustain or abstain the general fund balance that we currently have within Story County. I conclude, and I would recommend that at this point in time that any use of by non-employees be under this article be reaffirmed. And on the second part of this deal is I think we need to, the time is now, we are ready to address the volunteer situation. As I was reading through some documents that Joe Curtis gave me, there is a real need for community emergency teams that are out there, CERT teams for lack of a better word. And I have absolutely no problem with search and rescue, neighborhood watch, whatever it may be. But they got to be, we got to know who they are and they got to be documented. Their function has got to be documented. The liability from a risk management side has to be limited for us to know who they are and their qualifications, to include the training. My recommendation includes the committee, which includes two professionals. I mean, you can't get any better than Gary Hames and Joe Curtis when it comes to emergency management situations. If you look at the documentation that I have provided you from Gary Hames' volunteer fire department, I mean, it's incredible. It has taken Gary probably a very long time to get this done, but he is very, very conscious, very, very conscious of liability as it applies to his equipment and those volunteers who operate it. So with that, I would like a committee that is established, which would include the risk management team. It would include the fire chief, include our emergency management director, Joe Curtis, our safety committee president, Shannon Gardner, the sheriff, and maybe one or two others who we may not have right now. But let's get this thing in place so that from a risk management side, we limit the amount that we are potentially liable for because these individuals will now be trained. We will now know who they are. We will now know what they can drive, what they can't drive, and we may at some point in time then open up this discussion about volunteers operating county vehicles. But at this point in time, I don't feel that it is in our interest, from a liability standpoint, from a risk management standpoint, to continue this process. That's pretty much where we are.
how, does this, how does this change anything, if anything, from the days when I was a volunteer driving a fire engine?
It's gotten quite a bit better, because with Gary's program, with the volunteer fire department, they have to have a CDL license. They have to have 40 to 80 hours of instruction prior to the operation of any vehicle. And then they must go through a certified CDL instructor who will, for the most part, pass or fail based upon the inspection of the vehicle that they must go through, and also the operation of the vehicle. So their first thing is that they've got to apply for a CDL license. That doesn't give them the automatically the okay to go ahead and drive a fire truck or an ambulance. What it does is give them the ability now to go through the training program that the fire chief provides. And at that point in time, once they pass it, they're good to go. He feels comfortable that they can operate these vehicles in a safe manner. And from talking to Gary yesterday, there are more firemen and volunteers killed in accidents than there are with actual fighting a fire. Accidents are paramount in this. And as conscientious as he may be, he goes to great lengths, which he should, and I applaud him for this, to make sure that his firefighters understand the equipment that they are driving and also the way it's supposed to be operated and driven.
Okay. Anybody want to weigh in on this?
I'd like to hear some bubbles or comments or whatever from anyone in the audience.
Sheriff? This has been a controversial topic for some time. We've addressed this issue a few times in here in different manners. If you want my opinion on this personally, I believe it is a political attack on me, an attempt to discredit my office and my volunteer program. If you also look at Story County administrative policies, it says that department heads, elected officials, everything, are responsible for the vehicles that are assigned or allocated to them. It's not the exact wording, but it's pretty close. No, elected officials, department head supervisors shall be responsible for vehicles that have been assigned for their use. Okay. Now, the fire chief's table of contents for his policy manual has all been included and everything. And as an example, I don't know what it's an example of other than he has a program. I have policies also concerning my volunteer program. It also says how they're going to be trained. It says what they can and can't do, including use of vehicles, how that works out. We provide training. They know what they can and can't do. They go out with a deputy for a while who explains what they can and can't do and shows them firsthand what it is that they can and can't do. And the two instances that are claimed as concerns for liability are always going to be there. Everything's a liability. But the one instance, which was brought up here in this chamber during one of our meetings, was a horse that ran into side of one of my patrol cars while it was being driven by a volunteer. Now, I say a horse ran into the side of the vehicle. The damage was on the front fender behind the headlight assembly about where the front tire is. So I believe my words when I talked about this before was unless that car was sliding down the road sideways, there's no way they hit a horse hit them. It ran out of the bushes, ran out of the trees, and into the side of the car. It happens. We see that with horses, we see that with deer. They were not doing anything that was outside of policy or outside of responding to or normal traffic operations. As it stands right now, I only have two people that are out doing patrols. As a matter of fact, they're out doing patrols right now, and I just got word that they're out in the Highlands about as far back as you can get, and they found somebody in an abandoned house back there, which is an incident that initially came up on Saturday, and deputies responded out there, and now they're dealing with it. So they do serve a purpose. They're not out there driving with lights and sirens. They're not out there pulling people over. They provide extra eyes and ears. That's it. I'm going to take that just a little bit further. Since the first of the year, volunteers have put in about 500 hours of service to the county. We have one horse that ran into the side of the vehicle. And our policies aren't just willy-nilly. They've been ran through Pool Pact, and Ann Wiswell and Jack Ryan both responded, and I believe Mr. Gallagher was copied on that email, and it says that the policies that I have addresses training, supervision, except equipment, vehicle use, radio use, etc. That's shortening it. I'm not reading the entire thing. It says, Story County Sheriff's Office policy is well-written, consistent with generally accepted policies and procedures of law enforcement agencies nationwide, and they had no recommendations regarding the change in those policies and procedures. There were a couple of issues with forms that they did not see but were included in the packet. And just to make sure that everybody's happy with everything, I've been working with Austin and filling out not only the forms that I have them fill out, but we're working on getting all of the forms that Austin would like for HR to be filled out. So, back to your question you asked, how is this different from other volunteers? It's not. They're being trained. They're being supervised. They're not doing anything that they're not supposed to be doing. And they're serving a purpose and helping our community. And we have done everything possible to limit liability, and we train every month. We go over some topic of training.
Well, I think that we all appreciate volunteerism. It lacks comparison of what it was in the past. I know that the concern during the past is when these incidents arose that Human Resources had no documentation of any of these persons who were members of the team. Insurance company had no idea, as is with volunteer firemen. They're on record on who they are and reported to the insurance company, so these people are properly insured. If incidents happen and they don't know who these people are, is that a fact? They have an issue there. The other issue in here is suggesting that someone's driving a vehicle with a weapon in the car is a volunteer. He probably shouldn't carrying a weapon unless he's deputized.
No. There's also a history of volunteers carrying weapons. We've had range managers for years that have carried a weapon, and it's not that they use it, pull it out, anything else, but the possibility could arise, and I've addressed that with the volunteers, is it may happen at some point in time a horse or a deer or something needs to be disposed of if it's been injured and I can't get a deputy to it. The vehicle is equipped that way, but it's in a locked compartment or it's in a locked holder. It's not something that is left out willy-nilly, and it's not like they're packing a gun around with them. Like I said, right now there's only two people, and they drive together. I don't allow them singularly out in the vehicle. They're out together. They're the only two that are doing it. HR is fully aware of who those individuals are, and we've got about half the team on paper with HR right now, and I'm probably going to have most of them done day after tomorrow, most of them that are still outstanding.
Well, I don't have any
any background in law, probably have to look to the district attorney for guidance on these. Have you read through this at all?
I've read through the agenda item, yes.
But,
I'd like to address a couple of things. First of all, you suggested that this is politically motivated. Well, I can assure you it's not politically motivated on my behalf. I think volunteer programs are great. I appreciate what you're doing. And I have no anti, pro, or con political aspirations whatsoever on this. As far as I'm concerned, the bottom line is contingent liability. So, from my personal experience in my companies in the private sector, I can't just put it in someone that's not employed by the company into one of my company cars. If they have an accident, then I have problems with my insurance and liability. I drive a county car, and I was told when I took that county car, no one may drive it that's not employed at the county, because I wouldn't have proper coverage and insurance. So those are the two elements that I'm familiar with, other than what the law says. But it seems to me, Sheriff, that you would want to take the extra steps necessary, whether you have or haven't, to make sure that our county's not carrying contingent liability in excess of something that is practical. And so if we have an issue here, I do believe it should be addressed.
I guess that's what I'm saying.
Properly.
I guess that's what I'm saying is there is no issue. The only issue is that there's still a few folks that need to be gotten on paper that I'm working with HR to get fortified. The people who are driving are on paper, and for purposes of liability and coverage and everything, volunteers are considered employees. I'm reporting the volunteer work hours every quarter, and they're included. I've got the last two quarterly reports here. It's got their names on it, got their information on it. Like I say, most, half of them are already, Austin should have the papers on those. He came down and did several of them himself. There were several came up and saw him, and I'm working on getting the folks from the northern part of the county, which is what I'll be doing the day after tomorrow. Like I said, right now there's only two volunteers, and they're on paper. Austin has all of those, and Poolpack has weighed in on all of this, and they said that it is being addressed properly. It is, the policies are there, the safeguards are there, limiting our liabilities.
It sounds to me like there is a protocol to follow. I heard you outline it, and I'm sure you want to follow a protocol that protects your county, not only from your volunteers and the work they're doing, but also your county from liability. So I would encourage us to follow the proper procedure, whatever that may be, and the proper training, and not have folks that are not county employees that aren't properly vetted in our cars or in our vehicles.
And that's what I'm saying. They are being trained. They do have guidelines to follow. I have the documentation of their training. Every time we've done training, it's documented what the topic is, when it is, everything else. The folks that are out there operating vehicles have been trained, not only in the classroom, but then they also go out with deputies who instruct them in the field. So where is there something lacking?
We're being asked here, I believe, for this item, is to reaffirm Story County Administrative Policy. Reaffirm them. That are procedures that are in place, number 10, dated vehicle and equipment assignment and use. We're asking to do that, and we're asking to develop development of policy procedures relating to the adoption of volunteer participation programs. That seems like a proper way to approach an issue we're talking about. Do you have a problem with that particular language?
I don't have a problem with that particular language. I have a problem with suspending my program because I have policies in place. I have procedures in place. I have people getting trained. They are being checked, and they're not people who are out there drinking and driving. They're not people who have lost their driver's license. I have done everything that Mr. Gallagher is requesting. The issue is that Story County does not have those policies. The sheriff's office does have those policies, and BOPAC has already weighed in and said they're good policies. So I guess that would be my question. If volunteers are employees for the purposes of liability, where have I violated Story County administrative policies? Because they are employees, volunteer employees, that are operating county vehicles.
I'm missing something. Is it Story County's volunteer policies that we're looking to do, or Sheriff Antonoff's? Are you a part of or separated from the policies and procedures created by your county?
Well, there's a little bit of an overlap. There's a little bit of a difference. There is autonomy in the sheriff's office. It goes back to the separation of powers clause. You have judicial, executive, and legislative. Those policies work together.
Well, I've reviewed a lot of this over the weekend. I consider this a breach of the public trust. It is an extremely serious situation, in my opinion. I know that Mr. Gallagher sent a letter to the sheriff back in mid-May in order to cease and desist until this thing was ironed out. We had all of the proper procedures and insurance and all of those questions answered. Again, on May 21st, another letter. A portion of it. Last week I sent you an email regarding the improper use of volunteers operating company vehicles and the proper program approvals necessary for our insurance carrier. As of this correspondence, we have not received any documentation as to the volunteers involved or the incident report regarding the damaged sheriff vehicle. That was the incident where they ran into the horse. And goes on to say, I say again, the potential cost to Story County can be significant should potential lawsuits be filed as a result of injured persons or property. I've also noted that at the same time that all of this was occurring, that none of us had any idea who these people were. We had no names. We had no workers' compensation. The insurance pool, had we put in a claim, probably would have said, you're on your own. The ones that I have seen out in the public, as far as I'm concerned, are imitating peace officers. They have sheriff on their vest, they have sheriff on their hat, they drive cars that says sheriff on it. That's another clear violation of NRS. Also been noted that the volunteers have had firearms in the vehicle, shotguns in particular. I don't know what the legalities of that are. That may be even a federal thing under ATF. So we've got at least twice now we've ignored a cease and desist from the risk manager.
Well, that's not entirely true, Mr. Commissioner.
So I believe I have the floor. We have not done background checks on any of these individuals. We don't know if we're putting a felon in a car. Mark Sheriff with a shotgun. That's probably not a good idea, is it? I believe there are some elements here, malfeasance, misfeasance, and nonfeasance. These are not things that should be taken lightly. And it seems to me that we've pointed this out to the sheriff in writing a couple of times, and now here we are sitting here going over this again. So I don't know what my recommendations would be on this, but other than to say that as of now,
The CERT team thing needs to come to a screeching halt. It needs to be shut down immediately. Until this is all worked out, if we have to call in an outside investigation to look at all of this and give us some guidance on it, whether it's, I don't care who we get, if we get the Office of Public Safety, if we get the FBI, if we get the Sheriff's Office, or whatever it takes to look at this and get an outside opinion on it, those are my feelings.
Okay, Sheriff, you want to rebut?
Yeah, just for clarification, there are misstatements by Commissioner Solvangan. All of these people have been background checked. They're not felons out in cars and sheriff's vehicles. There is no violation of law having a shotgun in the car. And yes, back in May, there was a request that we discontinue or suspend the program until we get weigh-in from PULPAC, which was done. It was discontinued. Nobody was out until we got the weigh-in from PULPAC, who gave it the thumbs up, which Mr. Gallagher is aware of because he was copied on the email. So, like I said, only thing pending right now is a few items of housekeeping paperwork that I've been working with Austin on.
Come on up.
Thank you, Chairman, Mr. Commissioners. I'm not here to take a position on whether I like CERTs or not, or the program or not. And what we have on the agenda here really isn't either. It's for commissioners to affirm and look at our policies. I have a concern, and my concern is that my office has all of the documentation that is needed to show that workers' compensation is being provided for all employees and all volunteers, and that all the employees and all volunteers have gone through our basic HR trainings. It's just an online video that deals with harassment, deals with OSHA, deals with some other matters like that. It's pretty simple. And to go through and make sure that those volunteers understand the Story County policies and that they understand the other elements that are part of being an employee of the county. And that's for everybody. That's for all employees. It's for myself. It's for our volunteers with other agencies. We all know Mr. Quam, our natural gas guru. He has gone through these processes. And that's my concern. That's it. And I want all employees and all volunteers to go through that process and be registered with our workers' compensation. At the moment, I understand it has taken a year to get, at this moment, 15 of 20 known certs to go through the process. I was able to do 5 initially, and I was able to do approximately 9 or 10 on the second round. And the sheriff said he would work with me on getting the last 5 known certs of the 20 to get through that process. And I have come aware from the sheriff that there are potentially 50 certs on the record at this point. I don't know at what level they are. I don't know if they're driving or not driving or what they're doing. But that's potentially 30 people that I don't have on my books that may or may not be a volunteer. And I'll certainly be happy to allow the sheriff to chime in on what the status of those people is. All I want is whoever we have in the county, all of them, before they begin a program, to go through basic HR training. It's very simple. It's not arduous. It's not bureaucratic. Get our files updated and allow any kind of program like this, which I do think is a benefit to the community, without a doubt, to move forward. That's all I have to say. Thank you. And that does include a background investigation as well, what we do on all of our volunteers.
And Austin is correct. There's about 20 of them that are very active, and as he indicated, 15 of them have been through everything, still working on the other 5. The other ones aren't as active, so we're catching them and getting the paperwork completed as we can catch up with them. But they're not out there driving around anything else. Like I said, there's 2 of them, that actually go out and drive. They're the only two who have gone through all the policies, all the training, they have all on paper with Austin.
This is a question, should those five that haven't gone through this, should they be participating at all if they haven't completed what they have with their school?
Well, I haven't seen them, Commissioner, which is why they haven't been done. We are, hopefully we'll have them done Thursday.
I mean, should they be participating at all if they're not currently certified?
That's what I'm saying. They're not. They are on paper, they're here, they are a part of it, but they are not doing anything until we get the paperwork done.
We have the other 30 on paper so that they can be registered with the insurance pool.
I have all of their information, and I'm working on the forms that Austin is requesting. That's what I'm working on. Well, I have the names of everybody, names, information, all of that. But the specific forms that Austin would like and directing them to do the online video, stuff like that, that is what I'm working with Austin to get caught up.
I have a general impression as we go through and we discuss on this. I do believe we should reaffirm the administrative policies. I think that's appropriate. And I would ask staff to work at developing policies and procedures really to the adoption of volunteer participation programs, not only the sheriff's, but all programs in certain county events and requiring the use of county-owned vehicles. So to me, this is all-encompassing, and I would like to see it be a community-county effort as opposed to an individual department effort. And I applaud your efforts, and I agree that the volunteer program is very important. But I'd like to see it vetted on a broader base. And I'd like to see us develop policies and procedures that we would all follow in all cases concerning county vehicles and this type of operation. So that would be my position on the thing. And of course, taking into consideration the contingent liability insurances and making absolutely certain that we're covered as a county for a catastrophic event.
You want to make a motion
out of
that?
Before you do, I have a concern with this in respect to the sheriff's comment that we might have a problem here. Maybe sort of the district attorney's office should review this to see that not only is this maybe is this overlapping, but maybe this would be a separation, a violation of separation.
I
don't know. But
I personally don't want to make any kind of decision maybe at this time on it until we've had someone else look at this for us, because it's all kind of new for me, sure it is for two of you, and perhaps that's the best way to do it is to get have the district attorney's office take a look and see on the things that we have mentioned today just exactly where we sit on this. And I know Kenny Furlong in Carson City runs a very similar type operation, and perhaps I know he had some growing pains when it started out, and we can talk with him.
I'd like to look at maybe again the motion to continue this. Maybe we can direct staff to investigate this further in conjunction with the district attorney's office.
I'm sure you're not saying that you can jump into it.
Public comment?
I think you have several public comments.
Sure. Come on, Ms. Miller.
Chris Miller, for the record, gentlemen. I am currently a member of the Story County School Board. I am past president of the Nevada Association of School Boards, and I am a member of the International Science and Engineering Fair Review Committee. Obviously, I'm not speaking on behalf of any of those, but I would like to share some of, especially from the fair perspective, from the engineering fair and research perspective on safety. One of the things that I have found in each of those jobs is how very, very vital safety becomes and how much risk assessment is part of that. At the international level, for students on all research, before they are allowed to do it, We require that they do a risk assessment. There's no such thing as a risk-free environment. But we ask that they evaluate what the potential risks are, what they are doing to lower those risks, what they are doing to make things safe. In this particular instance, these are people volunteering who are very good people, who are helping this community, and I don't feel are being necessarily kept safe. If you are in a marked patrol vehicle, that unlike the ones in Carson or in Reno, say volunteer personnel, the public will perceive that this is a sworn officer. They're going to walk into a situation that may not be safe. And that safety issue is twofold to the community. So the people in the community need to feel safe as well. So those are my concerns that I wanted to share. Thank you.
Thank you.
If I may respond to that.
Sure.
The vehicle that they are using, while it is a black and white or one of the black vehicles that say Story County Sheriff down the side, there's also great magnetic signs that go on the side that say CERT volunteer when they're out operating that vehicle.
I'd argue that one, because I've seen them up many, many times without anything on it except CERT on the vehicle.
Mr. Miller.
For the record, James Miller, retired citizen of Story County. I've listened to this, and I want to first, for the record, let you know that I agree with the program CERT. I think that the more volunteer programs that we have in our community brings our community closer in an event in which we need to have people come in and help, no matter what it may be. I think that's important. I think it's a good program that the sheriff is putting on and trying to put together. You may have some housekeeping items you need to take care of, but we've had incidents in all areas in this county where people had their homes broken into, and we've had home invasions, and these volunteers, which I take my hat off to them, are doing a great job, but they're putting themselves also, if they're driving a black and white, I saw one this morning, no CERT on it, two guys in it, that's great, but again, they're putting themselves and other people maybe in jeopardy, and I think what you should do, my opinion is that an offer, what you're trying to do, get your housekeeping items taken care of, but the black and white should go. Make them, just like Carson City. This isn't something new. These guys aren't in vehicles that do the same things that Jerry has set up for this community, which is a good thing to do, but they're in a white car, completely white, and it says volunteer in great big letters. Other agencies, we did it here too. When a car, a black and white, is in where it's being repaired, they have a sign that goes in there that says out of service. You don't need to be having a volunteer group driving what is known as a black and white or even a patrol car. I think it's a good program. I think you've got some housekeeping things to take care of, and I think that can be accomplished. But the black and white thing, the patrol car, I think is a real issue for you.
Thank you.
I have to agree with Mr. Miller on that one. I think it's very tough in volunteers, but you need to really do it right. Having 50-plus already, I think, signed up last time. Jerry gave me some figures on that. I think it's wonderful, but I have to agree with Mr. Miller that we'll put them out in the black and white, and with the sheriff here and the sheriff on the hat, we're putting them at risk, and the fact that, again, that two others from the risk manager were completely ignored, I think is a pretty serious thing. Who's in charge? You know, the risk manager says no. No is no. If he tells me no, if he tells any one of us no, you can't do it, then you can't do it. So some parts of this I like, and there's a lot of things here that do concern me.
If I may weigh in, and I agree with Ms. Miller, I don't like necessarily having them in the black and whites. It's just a matter of finagling the vehicles around to get them where I want them. As for Commissioner Sylvangian's comment, I know for a fact that they have those magnetics on there now. If he saw them and one of them happened to fall off, because it, occasionally they do, I believe. Joe's not here. I believe Joe Curtis, or no, it wasn't Joe Curtis. Jesse Fain's husband, Nick, made the magnetics. Most of the time they stick. Once in a while they'll get wet or they'll get cold, and they do fall off. But I assure you they have the great big volunteer signs down the side, and as I can finagle vehicles around, yeah, they will be in a solid color car, and it will have amber lights. Trent's already ordering the light covers for me to swap those out. As far as what they wear, they're dressed no different than anybody in this room, except they have a fluorescent vest on that it does say sheriff across the front, and it says served across the back. So, and they also have ID cards that specific that they have to wear, and it says they are a volunteer employee. So we are doing everything. And Mr. Gallagher's letters, as I said, were not ignored. It was suspended until Pulpak weighed in and said that the policies covered everything. And yes, it is just the housekeeping now.
Ms. Dean?
Thank you. Kay Dean, Story County, Virginia City Highlands resident. I have a question actually on a different area we haven't discussed. How did the miles in section, on item number 2 of section 2, how was that determined on the policy? It has the Board of Commissioners and PAW, Pat Witten's initials on there.
No idea what she's talking about.
I'm talking, you want me to show you my policy?
Sure.
Well, I have a document that I printed off the agenda, and it says number 11, effective date 11-309, and it's the policy and procedure for use of private vehicle. And number 1 is the purpose, number 2 is the policy, and number 3 is the responsibility for review. And item number 2 in section 2 talks about the reimbursement, and you have to submit it on an expense claim form. Do you see that anywhere?
Yes.
Okay. And then below that, in the second bullet item, first and second bullet item, it has mileage numbers on there. So could you tell me how those were determined?
If you're referencing the average trip from the Reno-Tahoe Airport to Virginia City at 30 miles, to Carson City at 17, to Carson City...
Correct.
And Virginia City to Reno at 32.
Correct. That's what I'm referencing.
To the best of my knowledge, first off, these policies generally come as templates from the Nevada insurance pool. And I'm going to specifically recognize pool in this case because they are a risk liability manager. And for the record, while it might be assumed that Hugh Gallagher is the county's risk manager, I am. He was the deputy risk manager because we do it in tandem. So the policy comes in template generally, and like any good template, we try to customize and make it easy on the processes. I wish she was here right now, but our esteemed retired recorder auditor, Maggie Lowther, a pillar of this community, quite some time ago in previous policies, had set those rates because there are many of us that are forced to use a private vehicle policy, which is certainly not even germane to the discussion today, in my opinion. We're talking about county use. But many of us hop in our car at 4 o'clock in the morning to catch a 6 a.m. flight out and probably forget to hit the trip odometer. So these are standardized rates that have been historically used by us. I would hazard to guess I've been here 15 and a half years. I would tell you every bit that long.
Okay. And I have looked at the IRS policy. And the IRS policy reimburses actual miles rate based at the rate that the government sets every year. I'm sorry, I really have a terrible headset.
You exhausted your time. Thank you.
No, Mr. Witten was speaking all that time. I have not exhausted my time. And I have Googled the actual miles. What I'm trying to make a point of is that you are overstating your miles by 40%. Miles have to be based in reality. And the IRS has a policy that if individuals are reimbursed excess costs over what the federal government allows, and the federal government allows actual miles at the rate that they establish. When you increase your miles by 40%, you're paying more than the federal government allows. Therefore, in the future, now that you've been put on notice on this, I do believe you're going to need to include this as income, as the IRS so directs, on all the employees that receive this reimbursement. I'm also going to be contacting Pringle, your auditor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Phillips.
Thanks again, Mr. Chairman. Mark Joseph Phillips, Story County resident. Item number 14 for possible action, reaffirming Story County policy and B, development of policies and procedures relating to adoption of volunteer participation programs. There's nothing in today's agenda that there will be the discussion of misconduct of a county officer. There's nothing on the agenda talking about suspending the CERT program. I would be careful about that. And if you look in the chapter. You're looking at the chapter of NRS for sheriff. You'll see that the sheriff has complete authority over search and rescue period. You know, the statute gives the sheriff complete authority in every county in Nevada for search and rescue. So please keep in that mind.
Thank you.
I have a comment.
Any other public comment?
I do.
Go ahead.
I was going to try to remain silent during most of this, and I'm concerned with some statements that have been made. First off, Mr. Gallagher and Mr. Osborne both work directly for me. Copy of our organizational chart is available. Sheriff Antonaro is an elected official, does not. He has his own powers under NRS. I've been at this now for 15 years, and I would tell you that during those 15 years, the first six of which were in service as sheriff, I was fortunate enough to never have to have heard the words autonomy and separation of powers ever used by any elected official in this county. Throughout this process, I have mandated to Mr. Gallagher and Mr. Osborne that while they have needs to fulfill and documentation required, that there be no political motivations whatsoever. I chose to remove myself from the direct conduit and allow Mr. Gallagher to take the risk management side for just those reasons, as I wanted no political tainting or stenching of this as has been referenced today. I would tell you that autonomy and separation of powers is a great concept, and certainly it's legal, and it's in statute. I just looked it up. But I would also tell you that when the county shells out $350,000-plus a year for insurance premiums, that the county is the one that's responsible for managing the risk associated with that, regardless of what separation of powers. I'm going to look over at my successor, Sheriff Miller, myself, Sheriff Del Carlo before me, and tens of hundreds probably of other elected officials that have understood, yes, they have autonomy to do the job that they need to do under statute, but they've got to work as a team.
And that truly, to me, seems to be the nexus that's been communicated by my team, by Mr. Gallagher and Mr. Osborne in this case. We have housekeeping, pending details. This program is a year in its phase, to the best of my knowledge, and we're still tending to housekeeping, not knowing who and who is not on the books. And that makes it impossible for us to consistently manage. There's been comparisons, both good and bad, to the fire department. Story County Volunteer Fire Department, as administrated by, I believe, still Chief Drake, is a well-tuned machine. It wasn't initially, but over the years, we were able to get it there where all the training requirements, all the liability mitigations that Mr. Osborne has hit, and Mr. Gallagher from the vehicle operations, have been addressed through comprehensive programs. We didn't get those coming out of the chute from our sheriff. We didn't have lists of names. We still haven't trained all the certs. And the bottom line is, our responsibility as your risk managers is to mitigate those risks. That's really why we're here today. We're not here to kill CERT programs. The CERT, I agree totally with Sheriff Miller and Sheriff Antonardo. These are great programs, and these can be a valuable asset. But you've got to have the structure and the conformity, and you have to have it literally before you go through the program. And if you don't, you should not have to spend a year pulling teeth, asking for staff rosters and those types of things. So the bottom line here is, it is risk management, in my opinion. I would be fine if we didn't freeze the program, but as I have heard Mr. Gallagher say repeatedly to my face, I don't want to kill any program, I just need to know enough about it. We need to know who's in it so that we can structure it the same as our volunteer fire department and other volunteers, our docents and such that work with us. So that's where I'm coming from. Send it to the DA for autonomy and separation of powers if you wish. But I will tell you, then you ought to take a look at what your risks are for the $350,000, because I would also, as I recall looking at the pricing, and we don't get a specific breakdown of this, you've got to guess that a major portion of our liability exposure when it comes to that $350,000 policy is our law enforcement efforts, regardless of who the sheriff is. Sheriff Antonardo, Sheriff Miller before him, Sheriff me before him, Sheriff Del Carlo. This is one of our highest risk areas, and we have to control it.
Sheriff, you wish to rebut anything?
I just point out, like Mr. Whitten just said, when the volunteer fire department started out, it wasn't all peaches and cream. It has been in existence for a year, and I am working with Austin. Every time Hugh was asked for something, I'm getting it to him. Might not be right now. It might take a day or two, but everybody has their schedules. Everybody has their responsibilities. The information is coming. I think Austin and I are working pretty good at finishing up the paperwork. And like I said, those folks who aren't completed in the process aren't doing anything. Those who are completed in the process, and Austin has everything he needs, risk management has everything they need, those are the ones that are out there doing anything.
And again, not to rebut that, because there is no rebuttal, but I was saying maybe this is a conversation I would have preferred to have offline individually with you. The bottom line is when you make statements like, I'm getting the paperwork Austin would like, I watched this kid spend 80 hours a week in his office, of which probably 80% of it right now is dedicated on certain matters within one department. It's not a matter of what you like or not. It's what you need to accomplish the job that we're tasked to do, maybe outside of statutory authority, but by the structural organization of the county. So that's what it's all about, Sheriff. It's not about what you're allowed to do under the law. It's about cooperating and working as a team.
Well, Mr. Whitten, that's somewhat of an unfair statement, because you and I both know that a lot of those matters that deal with my office have absolutely nothing to do with the CERT program that Austin is involved with. And just for clarity, most of the stuff that Austin would like is there in the forms I've filled out. So yes, it is a matter of like. I'm transferring it from the forms I've already had the people fill out to the county-approved forms. They've signed confidentiality waivers that I provided. They've signed next of kin, emergency contact, all of that stuff. But it's not on the forms that the county would like. So we are swapping those out. But neither here nor there. It's housekeeping that is being taken care of.
If I may, you define housekeeping, and yet we have any type of accident, regardless of whether it's horse into vehicle, vehicle into horse, whatever happens. To the best of my knowledge is the county risk manager, and I'm going to look at the deputy risk manager, and Jessie Fain is listening so she can transcribe this to the e-verse. Has that ever been reported to us as risk managers, regardless?
Yes, a copy of the report was sent up.
Okay. How long did it take post-incident for that to happen?
To my knowledge, just a couple of days.
Okay, we'll validate those facts, and I know I don't appreciate being put on the spot any more than you do, you know, when there are random comments coming.
Well,
to the best of my knowledge, we were not made knowledgeable, any of the three of us involved in the day-to-day risk management staffing, we were not made knowledgeable of that accident until significant time had passed after that. And then we requested the report.
My understanding, or at least my direction, was to send it up, the same as we process anything else. Now, if it wasn't processed accordingly, then I'll look into that. But if I'm going to be doing every single function of my office, I might as well get rid of 20 employees and save a whole lot of time and money for the county. It's just going to take longer to get things done. I can only give direction, you know.
Okay, so you have a public comment on this. Pleasure of the board.
Well, I generally will go back to the action item, and I do believe we should reaffirm our administrative policy, and I would propose that we instruct staff and ask for the legal help and develop policies and procedures relating to the adoption of volunteer participation programs in county, and I think that that would include an oversight, overview, and an analysis of the sheriff's programs, along with all other programs in the community, and that we do it on a community collective basis as opposed to an individual department basis. And that's where I would stand today.
Is that your motion?
I make that motion.
I'll make that a second.
So, if I follow you correctly, Commissioner Gilman, are you following the recommended motion that's in here?
I'm following the recommended motion and including the fact that it's all volunteer programs, including the sheriff's program. And that be submitted to staff and to legal overview and oversight to develop policies and procedures that address community liability, which I believe is one of our most important functions here as commissioners. And I believe we have to look at the contingent liability for the county. And I believe the only way we can do that is properly vet it through staff review and organization.
And you second that, Commissioner Stringer? Okay. Seeing that there's no appetite to continue this, I'd like to also, this is gonna pass. I'd still like to see the district attorney review this with staff and make sure that that we're not crossing any lines that we should be crossing. Okay. All right. So it's been moved to second to approve the recommended motion on this. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, and the motion carries. All right. We're gonna move along to item 15. Joyce, this is you.
Joyce.
Sorry.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the commission. This is variance 2014-006, and I'll just start with a short introduction. The applicant is Joyce Klim, who's with us here today. The property is located at 109 South C Street in Virginia City, and the applicant is requesting a variance for the purpose of changing the allowed width and length of a sign, which is proposed to attach to the face of the porch of the subject business. All of the details are listed in your staff report. I do want to touch on one thing before going into before the applicant comes to the podium. So part of our jobs as planners is to enforce Title 17, which you all are aware of that, and to provide the information where applicants are in compliant or non-compliant with the code. On page 5 of your staff report, it outlines section 3.1 Story County Code 17.84 that the applicant is not in compliance with a part of Title 17 signs and billboards. There is a sign on the rear of the building which is not in compliant with the code. That's what the staff report outlines. You know, it's recommended by staff that sign stay there, and so amend a condition that would allow that sign to stay there. So we can, when we go into findings and conditions, we can touch on that a little bit there.
My name is Joyce Klim. I'm the owner manager of Comstock Corner Cafe. And I'm here today because we don't want a cookie cutter sign our building. We don't, a sign that's 15 inches tall, the length of our building is probably close to 80 plus feet, and it would not be an attractive addition to our town. It would be something very cookie cutter. And we want something to help draw business into our business, but we also want to add something that has some character as well. And we're looking at putting a sign just on our portion of the building rather than the entire building. And we're looking at doing it a few inches, actually 5 inches deeper than the sign than what the proposed ordinance is, because the front of the building is unsightly where the sign would be mounted, and that would cover the wear and tear that the building is showing. And then we wanted to put some embellishments on the top, 3 embellishments, to give a little more character to the sign. And that's what we applied for. And in applying for that, we've had several other things come up, and I would like to appeal to Marshall and to Lance. Jennifer, you probably can understand with us too. Our building is on the corner of C Street and Taylor, and the St. Mary's, which is a wonderful addition to our town, and the tourists love St. Mary's. And we have the train traffic that comes from the lower streets up. And parking, a lot of parking is beyond C Street, down on D, and even sometimes below. And we have some parking lots down there. It is a wonderful addition to be able to identify your building from the backside where that parking and where the tourists come up to see, you know, what you have available. There was a business that closed recently, okay? They enjoyed that luxury for many, many years. There's several other business owners enjoying that luxury now, and it's not a right-of-way. So I am asking that this not be considered a condition of us putting our front sign up and having to take the back sign down, because it is an addition. The back sign does need to be updated, and it was one of our plans to do that this year. And we would like to be allowed to continue to do that. Another thing that I would like to address is that parking lot is also, in the summer months, the school parking lot is a parking lot, and during the summer months when it's not in school, the pass-through is actually used as a street. And so I don't feel like that I'm asking on that for anything really special. I think it's something that, you know, we should be able to identify our business on that side as well. The other thing, there's, let's see, where is it back here? I've got it. It's the back of the building. I've got one more here. The front of the building, the signs over windows, I have no signs over any windows on my building. I only have signs over my doorway entrance. And the reading, the verbiage specifically says windows. So I don't think that that necessarily should come into play. However, when we put our big signs up, we will be, and when we have our walkway sign redesigned, we will be taking those signs down. Not the restaurant sign, but the wine sign will be coming down. Okay, so that's not something that's there permanently. It's until we can get the other signs put up. And I think that's really all I've got. And I would like you to, you know, give us some deconsideration and give us an opportunity to identify a building.
Joyce, the only issue I had with the sign was the artist's rendering was provided for Comstock Historic Commission, and I didn't attend that meeting because I was unavailable that day. It's got the sign centered on the building.
Oh.
If you look at page 19 of 21.
Okay, it's not centered on the building. It's centered on my portion of the building. There's a distinct break in the brick of the building.
If you look to the roof line of the building, it appears as though it's centered.
Oh, okay. But it's not.
I understand. Okay. When we look at page 17 of 21, it shows a silhouette superimposed on the building.
17? I'm sorry. You find 17. That's where it would be. That's where it would be. And then the new owner is going to be putting his own sign up.
Do you know if he plans on continuing the same style of sign?
I do not know that.
When I look at your artist rendering, I think it looks really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this will be perfect. And when you take it, you offset it to the left side of the building, just going to your side of the building.
Mm-hmm.
I think it gives an unusual look to the building, having signage like that. Unless the other person was to continue the same style of signage going south.
Okay.
Do you follow me on that?
I do follow you on that.
Austin, maybe you can answer this question. I don't think we could condition another property owner. No.
On the lower level of the building, there is a distinct break in the brick, where it's one building and another building. The top is a facade that was added later.
I think that looks really nice.
I don't have that page.
This is all centered. This is all the artist rendering centers it in the middle of the building,
which is appropriate.
In essence, this is just her half of the building, but the ceiling, but the rooftop is actually here, so it offsets. I was kind of hoping that this would be over here. But in fact, she only leases this portion of the building. This is the old bookstore still there. I don't think so. I don't have any issue with the rear side of the building staying. It's been there a long time, hasn't it?
Country Cupboard had a sign up there before we put it back up.
Joe had signs
back there for years, yeah.
And I have an amended condition that would allow the rear sign. I can read that condition into the record.
Okay.
Okay, so this is condition number 8, which will be amended. all other non-conforming signs except for legally non-conforming signs and the existing sign on the rear of the building on the premises must be brought into compliance with the Story County Code before the proposed sign is allowed by a variance, by this variance.
You know, if I may, and I'm looking about Desi and Austin, perhaps I might suggest, and I'm not a planner, that you consider an additional condition that says staff would work with both the building owner and perhaps the Comstock Historic District, that if and when the time comes for a sign on the southern portion of that building, that we do it in a manner that's consistent with the other signage that Joyce is having approved, if that's appropriate. I don't know if we have that kind of governance or not.
I'm just going to make a note here as well. Thank you, Chairman. Commissioners, I'll keep it short to keep it moving. We went through 18 months of workshops and developing the sign ordinance we now work under, and it was an intense 18 months of in this room as well as in the community coming up with an ordinance. And then you find little things in there like a 15-inch requirement for a sign that stretches a building like that, and I'll agree myself that I think 15 inches isn't enough. I should have probably made that 20 or 25 or something reasonable. But nevertheless, the ordinance is what we have in front of us. I am suggesting that we are going to revamp again the sign ordinance. I'm going to take a little different approach to our workshops, and particularly going through the historic district a little bit, but particularly through the VCTC, and getting more input from our business owners as well as property owners in this aspect. But if you did want a condition on here, you can't really condition on the neighbors, but to put, I'd have to think about how you do it, but an advisory commission to staff and to the Comstock Historic District, should a variance be requested on the abutting property, meaning the rest of the building, to exceed 15 inches to the 20 inches or whatever it is, that a similar type of design or at least width of the fascia be considered in that motion, or even be added to the findings of a variance for additional signage on the rest of that building. That could be done, and certainly staff will remember that, and I imagine there will probably be a variance coming one time or another for that, and to integrate that into that variance. And I'd be happy to accept that as part of that motion.
Might I make a suggestion?
One of the things that kind of offsets it is the circles on the ends. What if we took those off at this time and did not put those up and just put the one in the middle? Because then it would be centered properly, because that's where our door entrance is.
Want to try to mess up the stuff you got going forward. And I'm just thinking that if you did it the way it is now, perhaps just the rest of the building could be encompassed.
Done the same way.
Maybe the encourage to encompass the same type of sign.
I agree. I agree.
I come from such a retail background that as far as I'm concerned, signage is the holy grail of a successful business.
Yes.
And so often I see that signage in various, matter of fact, I saw it on a board years ago because there was a community that was failing, and they were failing because they had such a restrictive sign ordinance that from the thoroughfares you couldn't see who was in the stores. And so they had traffic accidents and people rear-ending others and trying to find where they were going. So I'm very sensitive to signing and the program. Generally, I like the signs that you put up there. I agree with Marshall that from an aesthetic perspective, perhaps it doesn't balance the building exactly, but of course, you've only leased a part of the building. So if I'm going to err in my life, I'm going to err on the side of good identification, because I think that leads to healthy retailing and healthy customers and happy districts. And so if I were to make an error in my life, Mr. Chair, it would be on behalf of good retailing.
Yeah.
And I believe in that signage, so. I'm comfortable with what you're doing.
Well, as I told you before a couple of times, Joyce, I really like your idea. I think it's a fresh new way to do some signage out there. And the only thing I have to do with Marshall, it would look better if we could center it, but we understand the situation in the building, so. But I really like it. I think it's a great idea. I'd like to see some more of that.
Thank you.
Should I say I hate, I won't say I hate the hanging sign building.
Everybody's going to buy something they don't like.
Going off of that, staff recommends that you could maybe make a condition that if she is no longer leasing the building, that the sign comes down. So you could add that to a list of the list of conditions.
How about if the
sign ordinance already, isn't it?
What's that?
The sign has to be removed under sign ordinance?
The signs do have to be removed after the business no longer is in business. That is correct. That's not what happens. But in this, if a and I'm going to kind of chime in a little bit back to the sign ordinance. I kind of agree. I mean, you look at the history of the town, and, you know, Bert will always say there were millions of signs everywhere. I don't know that that's really what the community wants, but the sign ordinance is a real challenge. You think some of the bigger ordinances would be the tougher ones, and they're not. It's the sign ordinance is the most difficult ordinance to write. It's the most difficult ordinance to administrate. It's the most to enforce. It's the hardest to do little variances like this because you're dealing with exactly that. You're trying to encourage your commerce. You're trying to get someone to help them get a business going, and then the first thing you do is go and tell them you have to tear all your signs down. But I think part of this, as Ms. Redmond explained, is a potential that that sign gets removed or the variance becomes null at the point that the business is no longer there. Maybe another way that could be done to create consistency, and I don't know if we have to think about this, I think the board could give directive to staff and figure it out, is the sign would come down, or the contents of the sign is really what needs to disappear when the business is no longer in business. The backboard would remain. If the neighbors go ahead and put that similar backboard on the rest of the building and the whole thing is consistent, at that point the backboard variance applies to the entire building and it stays indefinitely and it doesn't come down if one or more of the lease owners come in. We can write that language if that's the board's desire to keep that consistency, to keep the building intact and still allow content to disappear when a business goes under. I don't use that. That's not what I meant. But a business is no longer a business at that location. Sorry, Joyce.
Besides, Joyce has assured me that she's going to be around for a long, 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 long time.
Working hard at it.
Is there any public comment on this?
These are the findings of fact for variance 2014-006. There are special circumstances applicable to the subject property, including the configuration of the building and the location of the restaurant therein. Therefore, the strict application of the zoning ordinance deprives the subject property of privileges enjoyed by other properties in the vicinity or under identical zone classification, and that the zoning of the application is necessary for the preservation and enjoyment of the substantial property rights of the applicant, the property owner. That the granting of this application will not, under the circumstances of a particular case, adversely affect to the material degree the health or safety of persons residing or working in the neighborhood of the subject property and will not be material detrimental to the public welfare or material injurious to property or improvements of the neighborhood or the subject property. The proposed variance is in compliance with all federal, Nevada State, and Story County regulations. The proposed variance is in compliance with Story County Code 17.84 signs and billboards. And finally, the proposed variance is in compliance with and supports the goals, objectives, and recommendations of the Story County Plan, Master Plan.
Before there's a motion or a vote, have we adequately described how we would modify what I believe is Condition 8 regarding the non-conforming sign on the back?
Yeah, I can read that condition one more time. All other nonconforming signs except the legally nonconforming signs and the existing sign on the rear of the building on the premises must be brought into compliance with the Story County Code before the proposed sign allowed by this variance is installed.
Very good. Thank you. Call for a motion, though.
You ready? Okay. What's the modifications here, then? Motion then would be in accordance with the recommendation of the Planning Commission and the staff, and the findings under Section 6.1 of the staff report and/or other findings deemed appropriate by the board and in compliance with all conditions of approval, the Story County Board of Commissioners approved variance number 2014-006 Comstock Corner Cafe sign variance.
I'll second.
And moved and second for approval of variance 1014-006. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 And the motion carries.
Okay.
Thanks. Good to go, Joyce.
Thank you
very much.
Okay. Move along to item 17. Possible action, licensing board second readings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, I'm going to just start with the recommendation for continuations. I'm going to say the letter first, followed by at least the first letter of the name of the business, and we're going to, Community Development is recommending to continue these items. B, R. Dodd Metal. C, W.G. Yates. I, A.Z. Welding. M, Rosso Int. P, Ritchie Brothers.
What Q did you say?
And P. So the B, C, I, M, as in Mickey, and P.
You're going to continue Ritchie Brothers?
That is what's recommended, correct.
We do allow them to conduct business on temporary license while we resolve certain compliance issues. So there most likely are still a few minor inspections or issues either between Dean and or Fritz on the fire side, so but we don't need to get into issues.
For a motion for approval of B, C, I, N, and P, to continue those.
So moved.
Second. Moved to second. Continue B, C, I, N, and P. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries.
And Community Development recommends approval of A, Eagles Crest, D, C, I think that's Sealy, E, James Pat, F, Carson City, G, Direct Force, H, Hill and Hill, J, Steel King, K, High Desert Plumbing, L, CH2M Hill, N, Superior, O, Casey, Q, Delta Sales, R, Vega Asphalt, and S, ASAP Plum, or Pump. So it would be A, D, E, F, G, H, I, K, L, N, O, Q, R, S.
Okay.
Motion to approve the aforementioned.
I'll second.
Moved to second to approve those stated for second readings. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carries. Okay, I take 5 minutes, please.
One take.